We always recommend Shopify. It took us from an idea to a real business. We got set up, I think, in less than a day. With very little effort, we could just focus on the supply chains and the product development. Shopify gives us the ability to customize without the complexity. We can change something without introducing fragility or having to pay a developer. We're Thirsty Turtle, and we leveled up our business with Shopify.
Start your free trial at shopify.com/au.
Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, Frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche Zespri Sangold Kiwi. Das Stück für nur 55 Cent. Oder dunkle Tafeltrauben. 500 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
Abandoned places. Campground monsters. Things that go bump in the night. Today's true stories of the unexplained show you that lying beyond the edges where we can barely see, dark things lie waiting. Welcome back to Unexplained Encounters. I'm your host, Darkness Prevails. And you can follow me on Twitter, at Dark Prevails, where we have truly deep discussions about how much a Chad Goofy is. Today's episode features an assortment of campground, urbex, and ghost stories. So, enjoy! And when you can, send me your scariest unexplained stories at darkstories.org. Also, go to eeriecast.com to enjoy our other creepy storytelling shows, get some merch, or even sign up for EerieCast Plus to enjoy ad-free podcasts. Now, let's begin. Not all monsters are monsters. From Very Mean Jelly Beans. I was 10 years old in June of 1990 when my parents split up, and shortly after, divorced. At that time, we lived in Colorado Springs, Colorado, where my father was stationed at Fort Carson. We were a military family, and an outdoorsy family as it was, or at least my father and I were. My mother and older sister, not so much. I loved camping, hiking, fishing, and horseback riding. So when my parents split up and my mother took my sister to Price, Utah, to live with our grandmother, it was a bit of a change for me, not to mention a culture shock. We moved there in November of 1990. So in January of 1991, my birth month, I just wanted to get outside and camp and hike. As an 11-year-old kid who was very hurt and angry about all these changes with our family and that no one seemed to care how it made me feel, I begged and pleaded and threw tantrums. I was new to the desert setting and was more than curious. I wanted to explore. At the time, my mother began to date this man. They'd been dating for about 2 months in February of 1991 when he told my mother he would be glad to take us camping. He told me he understood why I was so mad and he wanted me to be happy. Sounds great, right? At the end of February, he took my sister, who's 5 years older than me, myself, and my mother out to the San Rafael Desert in southern Utah to camp for 2 nights. I was so excited. Right before we were to leave, my mother's work called and told her she would have to work Saturday, even though she had requested the weekend off. Being the low man on the totem pole, no choice was given. It was either come in to work or don't come back. We left Friday to go to the desert, and on Saturday morning after breakfast, my mother left for work, taking my older sister, who had her learner's permit and was wanting to get more driving practice. That left me alone with the boyfriend. At first, it was fine. We hiked up a mesa to a cave where he showed me some very cool Native American cave paintings. He showed me how to look for arrowheads and flint. He taught me about the Navajo and Paiute peoples who had inhabited the areas. I was fascinated. Then, like a cloud passing over the sun, his mood darkened very quickly. To this day, I don't know if this was something I had done or if it was just because of me. He started to tell me I was not a good child, that I was a brat who didn't deserve his kindness nor his knowledge. He told me my mother deserved a better daughter. He told me everyone would be better if I would just walk off into the desert and disappear. He told me my mother felt the same, and that's why she agreed to go out to the desert to camp, to get rid of me. She hated camping, after all, and I knew that. So what he was saying was making sense to my 11-year-old brain. Now, just in case you're not aware of the desert weather in Utah in the winter, it can be a very beautiful day in the 70s, just to drop below freezing at night. On that day, it was nice, so I wasn't wearing a coat, just jeans and a t-shirt. Then it happened. I kid you not. He told me I should start running, because if I ran, he wouldn't have to hurt me. I then watched him start to load what looked like a .38 caliber pistol. I was young back then, not as knowledgeable as I am now with firearms. So I did as he said. I ran, and I didn't pay any attention to where I went. I was just crying, running, scared. I have no idea how long I ran or how far. All I knew was I needed to get away and out of sight. When I finally felt safe enough to stop running, when I couldn't see the camp or smoke from the fire, I started to look for somewhere to hide. I found another cave and sat inside for a good bit of time. I'm not sure how much time elapsed, but I knew I couldn't stay there. I knew he would eventually find me, I thought, and then that would be the end. I thought I had no one, so I needed to find someone, but how and where? I remembered my father teaching me that if you're ever lost in the mountains, find a river if possible, and follow it downstream. That would most likely lead you to a town, city, or civilization of some sort. So that's what I did. I found out later that in the desert you're supposed to go upstream, not down. I still don't know how true that is, but that's what I was told later on. I remembered from our drive-in the previous day, there was a river somewhere nearby. I went off to find it. And find it I did, proceeding to follow it downstream, walking somewhat blindly while lost in thought about my mom not wanting me and how I should have never begged to go out there. This was all my fault, I told myself, and I was probably going to die, and that would be my fault too. Why was I such a brat, I wondered. The sun was starting to go down. If I were to throw out a guess, it was probably about 4:30-ish. Maybe 5 p.m. by then. I'd been walking since 10 a.m. The temperature was starting to drop, and I began to cry again. I was even more scared. Still not really paying attention, I tripped and fell into a small river. Great, now I was alone, scared, and wet. But the shock of the water snapped my brain into focusing. I needed shelter. At the time, I had no idea what kind of predators lived there. Bears, wolves, no idea. But I didn't want to die. I wanted to tell my mom I was sorry and to please let me come home. I would tell her that I would never do this again and I would be a good girl. I just didn't want to die. I found another small cave, not much bigger than a coat closet. Well, maybe not a cave, more a small alcove that afforded me some coverage. And I curled up into a ball under my t-shirt. And I tried to calm down. I was so cold and the temperature was steadily dropping. If I remember correctly, it got down to 38 that night. Not below freezing, but it definitely felt like it. Then the howling and yipping started. I had heard it before, and people had told me it was coyotes. Maybe it was, and my scared, overreacting brain freaked out. But to this day, I've never seen coyotes that big. Nor have I ever seen coyotes walk upright. There were several of them, maybe five. But they were moving around me so quickly in the darkness. The only light was from the half moon, and it wasn't illuminating much. I look back now, and I'm glad it wasn't. These things seemed to circle me throughout the night, almost like they were curious. Maybe they were just messing with me. They did get close enough for me to see that they looked like really big, scary dogs. But they didn't seem to be threatening me, if that makes sense. Though at the time, I didn't care what they wanted. They needed to go away or kill me and make it quick. At least I hoped it would be quick. Sadly enough, I thought that would be more preferable to freezing to death or starving to death. I'd already resigned myself to one or the other, but now this. I have no idea how I fell asleep, or if I passed out from fear. But suddenly I woke up, and it was very early dawn, that in-between time similar to twilight, and I was alone again. My legs were numb, and it was hard to walk. I would get strange shooting pains through the numbness every time I took a step. I was hungry and thirsty, and I wanted my mom. I started crying again and telling myself out loud that it was my fault, and I did this to myself when I saw it. It looked like a large dog or wolf. It was staring at me from the top of the ridge. I heard it yip at me, then ran the other direction. I stared at it, dumbly, unsure of what to do next. Would it eat me? Was it going to leave me alone? What do I do? Then there it was again. Or at least I think it was the same one. But this one was now at the bottom of the ridge, maybe a football field away from me. And it, too, yipped at me. But this time, it did not run away. It turned around and walked away from me slowly, but kept turning to look at me. Every time it would look back at me, it would yip again. And I started to think, maybe it wanted me to follow it. I had nothing else to do with my day, obviously, so I followed. At that point, I couldn't see things getting much worse. I followed it for maybe an hour, maybe longer. The sun had come up completely when it finally stopped, turned around, and stared at me for what seemed like forever, until the noise of an engine drowned out the silence. Then, just like that, it took off, and this truck came into view. It was a state park ranger, and he was out looking for me. I had never been so happy. I started to attempt to jump up and down, but I fell due to how weak my legs and feet were. He jumped out of the truck, scooped me up, and placed me in the passenger seat, where he radioed in that I'd been found. He quickly gave me a Snickers and a Coke, and boy, I tell ya, it was to this day the best Snickers and Coke I'd ever had. I found out I had severe hypothermia and frostbite on much of my feet. They wanted to cut off some of my toes, actually. I'm glad my mother didn't allow them to do that, though to this day I still have nerve damage in all of them, and if my feet get cold, the pain can be excruciating. I also found out my mother didn't want to leave me out there. He wanted my mom to himself, and apparently I was in the way. To my knowledge, they never found him after that day. He had left the desert, called my mom at work to tell her I was gone and that she was free. Apparently, upon listening to her response, he realized he'd made a mistake, so he ran. They told me I must have been hallucinating the big dog coyote wolf things that were walking around on 2 feet, possibly due to hypothermia. When I was 15, I was with my best friend, who's full-blooded Navajo. She asked me to tell her great-grandmother about what happened to me and what I saw. She told me of a legend her grandmother told her about a family of skinwalkers who were supposedly in the San Rafael Swell, who were known not to be hostile or harmful, that they just wanted to be left alone. Maybe it was a hallucination brought on by my 11-year-old mind and hypothermia. Or maybe not all monsters are monsters. In my experience, the only monster in my story was of the human kind. But in any case, thank you to whatever or whoever they were. I'm alive because of you. I still have a hard time with this today. I get emotionally unstable if I get too cold, or if I feel lost and don't know where I am. I can't really control the feeling. I know it's got to be some form of PTSD. The Dog Man Talked to My Dog. From Wolfenstein 572. This story happened about 2 years back. My grandparents owned this cabin in the woods. I used to always go up there when I was little. Once we were on winter break, I asked my friends, Jay and Max, if they wanted to stay at my grandparents' cabin for a while. Then, of course, I asked my grandparents for permission. Luckily, they allowed us to stay for several days. My friends and I were excited. We'd always been outdoor kids, and my friends always wanted to see my grandparents' cabin. Soon the day came, and we all went. My grandparents came with us, just to make sure everything was in line. After that, they bid us farewell, and it was just me and my friends. Well, there was a dog, too. A German shepherd named Buck. He's actually named after the Call of the Wild novel. Buck was a very bold dog. I'm not kidding when I say he once went toe-to-toe with a coyote when I lived back at my parents' ranch. It was weird when I noticed how quiet and jittery Buck had been acting the first few nights. He wasn't really nervous, per se, but I could tell he knew something was off. Animals just can sense things like that. Then it happened. I think it was the fourth night. We were all outside the cabin. Max was on the barbecue. Jay and I were talking about school stories. Buck was a few feet away from us, digging holes in the ground, I think. All of a sudden, he began to bark wildly towards the trees, and I mean like crazy. If you saw him in that state, you'd think he had rabies. We all ran over to Buck, then looked at what he was looking at. There in the tree line stood a dark figure. I thought it was a man at first, but as I focused on it, it was nowhere near the shape of a man. It was standing on its hind legs, but its hind legs were bent back, like a canine. Its head, too, was just like a canine, like a wolf or a coyote's. It was covered in thick, black fur, but had piercing yellow eyes. Its ears were pointed at the tips, like a wolf's. As I stared at this thing, I noticed it had hands, not paws. Hands ending in large claws that would put a bear's to shame. It stood at around 7 feet tall, and I could clearly see muscles. It was very lean. Upon sight of this thing, I audibly gasped, which I think it heard, because it looked directly at me, like it was trying to stare into my soul. Buck, who I think saw the thing staring at me, began to bark even more, if that's possible. Then we heard the creature bark back. I swear it made Buck go silent for a second. That thing's bark was deep, menacing, booming. Then Buck began barking back, followed by the creature barking even more. Then suddenly it let out a sound, like a mix between a dog's bark, a human's yell, and a wolf's howl. Buck stopped in his tracks. We stood in silence, until Buck began to whimper and hide behind me. I then heard Max whisper to himself, "What the heck is that?" Pretty sure the creature heard it too, because I saw its ears perk up. After a moment of just standing there, the creature turned around and began to walk off. It was so creepy, because the way it walked was like a man too, its arms swinging side to side, taking long strides as it went. That was enough for us. We all booked it back inside the cabin and just sat there in the living room, quietly. Remember how I said Buck wasn't really nervous before this? Well, after that, he was nervous the entire time we stayed at that cabin. He wouldn't even go outside, day or night. At first, my friends and I began trying to rationalize what we saw. Somehow a misidentification of a bear, perhaps. Some kind of wolf or a mountain lion. Then we started to get into more radical ideas. Sasquatch and things like that. It didn't take long before I began to research werewolves and dogmen. I don't remember if it was a full moon that night or not, so I guess maybe it wasn't a werewolf? Even after the encounter, Buck began staying very close to me, and he wouldn't want to visit my parents' ranch anymore, since they also had forest around their property. I don't know what that thing said to my dog, but I know for certain it wasn't good, because he's never been the same.
Kaffee in seiner besten Form. Mit Cubo wird jeder Kaffee auf Knopfdruck zum Genussmoment. Denn mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo genießt du feinsten Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Vollmundige Aromen dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie und über 17 Sorten Kaffee für jeden Geschmack. Erlebe Premium-Kaffee schon ab 29 Euro. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
Meditieren, Yoga, Joggen, nichts entspannt mich.
Echt? Mich entspannt meine Steuer total.
Steuer? Wie Finanzamt? Die Steuererklärung?
Ja, ich habe ganz locker über 1000 Euro zurückbekommen.
Hast du geheime Connections?
Nö, nur die Wieso-Steuer-App.
Wow, und das ist einfach?
Klar, die macht fast alles automatisch.
Plötzlich fühle ich mich so entspannt.
Hol dir dein Geld zurück. Tiefenentspannt mit Wieso-Steuer.
Wendigo Encounter While Zoinked from Schnitzel. This story starts off on a warm summer evening at a friend's house, around half a year ago. Me and three of my friends, Cole, Andre, and Lucas, were at Cole's place. It was our usual hangout spot on the weekends. At around 7:30 p.m., we were in his basement, playing video games as usual. At one moment, Lucas died in the game, and got so mad he threw the controller onto the floor, which ended up causing it to break. Cole wasn't very happy about this. After all, that was his controller. Feeling bad about his lapse in judgment, Lucas told Cole that if we went to Walmart that night, he would buy Cole a new controller. We often got bored through the night, and would often end up going to Walmart anyway. Plus, there was a Taco Bell right next door to Walmart, and we were all quite hungry. None of us had had supper yet. We got into Cole's Honda Civic and headed out to Walmart to fill our stomachs. With our brand new controller in hand, and some Taco Bell in our systems, we began to talk in the parking lot of the Taco Bell. We then got onto the topic of substances. Lucas told us about a store nearby that sells special gummies. Now, to this day, I've never done anything drug-related, and never really wanted to do anything drug-related. But when the guys heard of a special gummy, they were super curious. So we rolled into the parking lot. We gave Lucas about $30, and he walked in and out with the goods. Of course, the two of them wanted to try out the gummies as soon as possible. But Cole said that his mom was home, and if we did them there, she would find out, and very readily tear us a new one. I had an idea. I remembered my family owned a small cabin about 20 minutes away, and I thought the guys could try the gummies there. I pitched the cabin idea, and they were instantly sold. We began to make our way down to the cabin. For context, this isn't some old cabin from the scary movies you've seen. Instead, it's pretty much just a newer-looking small home. It has a bedroom and a bathroom to the right, and to the left, you have a kitchen with a smaller bedroom with four bunk beds. Straight ahead from the front door is a small living room. Now, the property is surrounded on one side by a wooded area, and on the back of the cabin, you've got a big hill with the cabin being on the top of that hill. There's a small cornfield at the bottom of the hill, and probably 50 yards to the left of the cabin, we have this wooden storage shed that we use to store our four-wheelers and other things. As we pulled up, I instantly felt on edge, like someone was watching me from a distance. As we stopped the car, I got out and looked around the area. I looked at the storage shed. I thought I saw a weird flash suddenly going behind it, but I brushed this off as my imagination. We went into the cabin and the guys were ready to try those gummies. They were acting like kids on Christmas, unwrapping their favorite presents. I offered to be the sober one since, at the end of the day, someone's got to drive the guys back home. Around half an hour went by, and Andre started to act in a funny way. He began laughing at any little comment. Then Cole started to do the same thing. I then realized the gummy was beginning to strike them. Cole grabbed his AirPods, kicking off his own little rock concert in his head. Meanwhile, Andre connected to our speaker that we have at the cabin and started to dance around to Sweet Caroline. I guess Lucas was more tolerant to these gummies because he looked about as sober as I was. I always thought that when you get high, you just turn into a lazy bum, just sitting there deep in your own thoughts. But I didn't question it. I just sat there on the couch. Around 2 to 3 hours passed by, and the energy began to die down in the cabin. By then, it was about 2 a.m. Cole went into the bedroom on the right. Lucas passed out right on the couch. And Andre said he was going to go out into his car so he could listen to some music. So out he went, and I went on to the other bedroom. I turned the light on. I lay in bed, trying to get some sleep. Before long, I heard something. There was a tapping noise at the window on the wall in the middle of the room. I mustered up some courage to sit up and take a look. But when I did, I saw nothing there. But I continued to hear the tapping. I sat there waiting for something to come into view of the window, but nothing came out. And soon, the tapping noises went away. I gave a sigh and tried to go back to sleep. Out of nowhere, my phone started to ring. Who calls someone at this time of night? I thought. I picked up my phone and saw it was my dad calling. I answered with a tired, "Hello?"
"Hey, sport. I saw on the trail cameras you guys are down at the cabin. Just want to let you know I might come down in the morning to do some hunting. Could you get my bow ready?"
"Sure, I can do that. Bye, Dad," I said. I got up and got his bow ready as requested. For some reason, it was on the other bunk bed on the other side of the room. So I just got up and got it ready for him, sorting his arrows and such. Then I remembered Andre was still out in his car listening to music. I called him, telling him to come back inside. I didn't want my dad to come down here in the morning to find him in his car hungover. Andre agreed and said he'd be in soon. I went back to bed, and around 5 minutes later, I heard the doorknob jiggle. It startled me at first, but then I remembered the door locks automatically. It was probably just Andre wanting to come inside. So I walked over to the door, and I was about to unlock it. But then I looked out the front door window, and I was frozen at what I saw. Right in front of the door, I saw this tall figure. And I mean so tall, its shoulders were as high as the top of the doorframe. Its skin was so gray and taut, it looked like clay. It looked like this thing had not eaten in months. I could almost see its ribs poking through. Then this thing, whatever it was, lowered its head to where I could see its face. And oh boy, this thing's face was pure nightmare fuel. Its eyes were black and had holes where skin should have belonged, and it had layers of teeth, all jagged and pointy. The thing then spoke to me.
"Let me in."
But what was really terrifying and confusing was the way its voice sounded almost exactly like Andre. I knew I couldn't let it in. Who knows where Andre actually was with that thing out there? I broke out of my trance and quickly remembered my dad's 12-gauge. It was in the other bedroom, and there were shotgun shells on the table in the living room. When I started to run to the bedroom, I guess Lucas heard me and woke up. He looked up and saw the beast behind the door.
"What is that?"
Lucas screamed as he jumped into the air. When the creature saw Lucas, It started to jiggle the doorknob so hard, I thought it was going to fall out. I ran from the bedroom with the shotgun. Then I picked up the shells from the table, inserting them into the gun. I've grown up around guns pretty much my whole life, so when I fired towards the beast, I was almost entirely sure they hit. There was a thud, a terrifying scream, which sounded like that of a fox somehow. Afterwards, a figure began to run away from the cabin, down the hill, disappearing into the cornfield. Another creepy aspect to this was the way it ran, the speed it was capable of. It had to be at least 250 yards from the cabin to the cornfield, and that thing was there in only a few seconds. After seeing that, I dragged Cole's woozy butt out of the cabin, Lucas following behind us. We ran over to Cole's car and opened the door. There was Andre sleeping in the driver's seat. Since we couldn't really move Andre, instead we just hopped in and took off back to Cole's house. After this experience, I have not been back to my family's cabin. It Followed Me, from Spartan Thorn 9. This happened when I was 13 years old. I lived and still live in the Great Plains of Texas. We've got a lot of agriculture and ghost towns in our area. This encounter happened one fall, I believe right after football season. I was on crutches after the season because I'd torn my meniscus and ACL. This experience happened when my family and I had gone out for a drive to one of our local cities at about 10 p.m. My sister was hungry, so we decided to get some McDonald's. I had a double quarter pounder. After the meal, my sister talked to us about a ghost town around the area. I'm not one for scary movies, nor scary stories, so I'm sure you could guess my response. But my brother was all in. I'll refer to my brother as R, my sister as A, my mother as T, and my father as J. J didn't want to get up to anything this late. R tried to get him to change his mind, and somehow he talked him into it. Now, the ghost town was about 30 minutes from where we were. Quite a drive. When we arrived, we remembered that A had talked about a school that she and her boyfriend had gone to a couple of months ago. So we checked out this school first. When we got there, there were new windows installed and a camera that had been recording us. Apparently, the ghost town was used to having people come in and stealing things or loitering. So I can understand the cameras. T told my dad to get away before they could see our license plate. But I can assure you that we didn't come here to steal anything. We checked out the little town a little more, and eventually began to head out. Right at the end of the road we were on was a little house that we hadn't noticed coming in. We stopped there to check it out real quick. The house looked as if no one had been there in years. Everything was torn down or rusty. Very clearly abandoned, and for a long time. Now, I didn't get out of the truck. I was on crutches, remember? T, A, and R had gotten out of the truck to go and investigate. When my dad and I had pulled a little closer to the entrance, I'd gotten a sense of unease and dread. It suddenly felt like someone was watching me. Me in particular. I looked over at the door of the house, and I swear I saw a white figure sitting there in the doorway, staring back at me. I quickly asked my dad if he could see someone at the door, just to make sure I wasn't seeing things. I guess he didn't hear me. Maybe he was focused on putting on the hazards. I shook off the paranoia. About 5 minutes or so later, my brother comes running out of the house, yanking open the door that I was sitting against. And I almost fell out. "What happened? What's wrong?" I ask. His face was so pale, like he had seen a ghost. He runs to the other side of the car. I look back at the doorway, and I see something again. And whatever it is there in the doorway is looking at me, mouth wide open, smiling. Its grin was ear to ear. I looked back over, seeing my mother and sister running back right behind R. My mother had her phone in her hand and her other hand over her mouth. I knew something was up. My father and I started blaring questions at them. Those three had just hopped right back into the truck. It was chaos. I had to scream and say, "One at a time!" They went quiet, and my mother went first, explaining. We had to walk a whole football field to get to the house and to see what was all over there. Then my sister chimed in. About 3 minutes after we got to the house, Mom went around and was checking things out. Mom continued, "Your sister tried to get in, but when she barely touched the window, it crashed in. After the window crashed in, there was a voice. It sounded like you. Like you, babe." My mom said to my dad. The truck went silent. Then eventually A said, "To me it sounded like my boyfriend. It sounded real monotone and told us, if we don't leave, they're calling the sheriff, over and over. But the thing is, it sounded very evil." I then remembered the figure that I'd seen in the doorway, and I mentioned it. I then told them about the figure I saw in the doorway. They all stopped their story. I didn't think they would believe me, but my mom and dad did. My mother began to ask my dad why he didn't come looking for us, because she said they'd been gone 20 minutes. But my dad looked at her like she was crazy, saying that they'd only arrived about 5 minutes ago. I don't know. Even to this day, I'm not sure what happened. Just stay safe out there, and don't go into abandoned houses at 11 p.m. in the Great Plains of Texas in some ghost town. Never Alone. From Meg. This took place at a campground in North Carolina, called Sandy Ridge. I don't want the owners to get any hate. It was summer 2022, and I was not alone in the woods. I was with my younger sister, and we just got there, and were very bummed, because online it had said there was a pool, but there wasn't one. I was like, well, now what? We took a look at our little brochure. It did mention something about hiking trails. So we walked over to the office and asked the lady behind the counter about them. On another note, this campground was owned by an older couple. It was a small place, so the lady at the desk was the owner's wife. She had told me that the pool was still being built, but there were some ponds back in the woods, and that we could just ask her husband about it, because apparently he was out on the trails right now doing some maintenance. My sister and I took our golf cart out. Pretty much as soon as we got to the trail, we found her husband. He was on this tractor-type thing. He let us know very excitedly that there were 400 acres of trails to explore. I don't know if the dirt trails show up on maps. He also let us know that if we went out right before sunset to one of the more far-off trails, we could see bunnies. At the time, I was like, oh, that's cool. But now looking back at it, I wonder why I would go far into unfamiliar woods right before dark. But I was naive, so we continued exploring the rest of the day. We found a skull of something later on. Not sure what it was exactly. I'm a city girl, so I sent a picture of it to one of my country friends. She said she had no idea what it was either. So that's weird. Obviously, I put it under the golf cart seat to go ask my dad back at the campground. On the way back, we saw a little house right when you enter the trails. There were a lot of trails, but it was two that split into more and more and seemingly never ended. As it got dark, we got stuck in the sand. I remember thinking, oh great, but I was trying my best to stay cool, nonchalant, be the brave older sister. I tried to push the golf cart, but that didn't work. So I was like, guess I'm gonna call that nice guy from the campground. At the time, I thought he was a good dude. I did just that. We were about 10 minutes into the woods on the golf cart, so it would be like 20 minutes at most for him to get out of bed and get onto his tractor and reach us. When we called, however, he was there in less than 5 minutes. I was scared because I'm not used to the woods. As you could expect, I was very happy to see him so fast. I didn't think about it being weird back then that he had arrived so soon, as if he had been much closer than he should have been. Anyway, as he was helping get the golf cart unstuck from the sand, I asked, "Are people allowed to hunt here?" Not because I hunt, but because I wanted to figure out the skull, but I didn't want to tell him exactly. He got the golf cart unstuck pretty fast. We thanked him and went back to the campground. My dad was mad that we didn't just call him to get his truck and tow us out, but I didn't know if his truck could fit on those trails. I showed him that skull, and he said it looked to have been shot. He showed me the little hole in the skull where the bullet had hit it. I was like, "Oh, nice, I guess," and I immediately showed and told my sister. My sister is pretty quiet around everyone except me. She was like, "That's weird." The next day, we went out, blasting music on the golf cart. Nobody was around to hear it anyway. My sister found a hunting stand right by where the owner had said to look for the bunnies. Not really sure how she spotted it. It was so well hidden. It would have been easy for someone to sit there and watch. On another day, we were out quite late. I saw something fall from the sky, making weird noises. It was almost dark at that point. We'd been there about 10 days, so I knew whatever fell from there fell into a ditch nearby. A particularly gross ditch. I went to look, to see what it was. Possibly a bird or something. So my sister and I grabbed the golf cart. But the golf cart wouldn't fit off the trail in that area. So I hopped off and told my sister to stay put. I walked a few steps and suddenly got this feeling of, nope. I backed up without a word, got back on the golf cart all casual-like, and sped away. Meanwhile, I hear the sound following us through the side of the trail where we couldn't see it. We got about 100 feet from the campground, and the golf cart got stuck again. I told my sister, "Stay on the gas, I'll push it out." My adrenaline, I guess, had me going. I got it out very quickly this time, then jumped on the back of the golf cart, climbing to the front, and got back to the driver's seat. We finally make it back out of the woods. My heart was pounding. It took me a few days before I felt comfortable enough to go exploring again. That day, the two of us found a trail that said, "Do not cross," and it had chains wrapped around trees to block it off. We were dumb kids, so we ignored it and went around it. The area was almost all sand, but thankfully we didn't get stuck. We found a sweatshirt hanging from a tree. We went deeper, maybe because we were dumb. We saw a road that led to a driveway with a hill, so we followed it, and we were led to a big log cabin. We didn't go near it, though. The weird thing was, the trees around it were all in perfect lines. On the way back, we found another hunting stand. This one was rusty and fallen over. When we got back to the chained-off area, to our luck, the owner was right there. I did the talking and played dumb. Something along the lines of, "Oh, we got lost. I don't even know how we got here." He replied, "It's okay. I'll just unlock it so you can get by, darling." I said thank you, and we sped back. The next day, we went back to see the log cabin again to take a picture. But the driveway was all blocked off this time. So he knew we were back there, and he just let me play dumb like that. We went past the old rusty hunting stand again. We found a huge barrel of something, not sure what, surrounded by partially buried trash bags. And there was another trail. I remember thinking anything better than going back through the chains. So we went on this other trail. It led us back to one of the trails I recognized, and eventually back to camp. On our last day there, we went on one last night ride. It was scary, though. Not directly scary, but more implied. We felt watched everywhere we went there. Not really sure what's going on. What was in the house? From Robert 117. For the story's sake, I'm going to make up names for the ones that were with me at the time. Sarah is my current girlfriend. John is one of my closest friends since childhood. and Robert is someone I met from school a couple of years ago. Now, Sarah can't speak, due to an accident that damaged her throat. We learned sign language to make it easier to talk to each other. John is from a military family. He knows a lot about the benefits, ASVAB, etc. Robert is a stubborn redneck that doesn't back down easily. Now on to the story. As John and I were talking one day, Robert hit me up with a text, saying,
"Bro, I found this abandoned two-story house nearby. Wanna go look at it?"
I was thinking about it, then asked John his thoughts about what Robert asked me. John thought it was a good idea, because we had nothing else to do, and it was a Friday. I asked Robert if John and Sarah could come. He said sure. I asked Sarah about the house. She was a little hesitant, but said yeah. We all met up at Robert's place and began to walk towards this abandoned house. I'd say after about 20 minutes, John asked Robert if he even knew where he was going, obviously a bit irritated. Robert said it was just around the corner. A couple of minutes went by, and we found the place. We went around back, and John found an unlocked window. All of us climbed inside. We explored the place for about 10 minutes. Robert began talking about the history of the house. He was talking about a big family living there for years. Allegedly, one night, a psychopath broke in and began to kill them one by one. Robert said the guy was known as the town's Reaper, taking lives, not getting caught. I had to know when this happened, and he said it was about 2 decades back. The bank bought the land and tried to sell it to people. Most buyers backed out, and oddly enough, those who did buy would always leave the place by the 6th day. John and I were intrigued by this story, but Sarah was not taking a liking towards it. She never really liked horror. I pulled her in and said, "It's just a story." She gave me that look that she wanted to leave. I told her to give us a couple of minutes to finish exploring the place. She gave me that, "I'd rather not, but make it quick," sigh. By then it was getting dark. John said we should start heading back to Robert's. We all agreed, and Sarah gave a sigh of relief to get out of the house. I was a little disappointed, because I like everything horror. It's rare to find a house with a story like this. As Robert tried to open the window we came through, it wouldn't budge. John said that can't be right, because we found it just wide open. We started looking around the house for any other way we could leave. Sarah held on to my arm, becoming more and more paranoid. I tried calming her down, but it was no use. I went to the front door and tried to open it myself. Of course, it didn't budge. John said he saw a broken window somewhere upstairs. As our group went to find it, Robert began to hear tapping in the room next to him. The tapping was light. He wasn't really paying attention and shrugged it off. When we found the room with the broken window, Sarah was trying to tell me that John was gone. I could tell she was becoming more and more scared. When something serious happened or something feels like a threat, Robert gets a stern look. He took out his knife and went looking for John. Sarah grabbed his arm, trying to stop him from going. Even she knew that was pointless, because Robert was one of those no man left behind types. Robert told her that he was not leaving John behind, then left to go look for him. I tried to clean the sharp glass from the window. When I finished, I had Sarah go out first, followed by me. As I looked back, I saw red eyes in the next room. I kept a straight mind and helped Sarah down from the miniature balcony. She wanted to go home so bad, but I told her I can't leave them here without knowing if they're okay. I'd say about 10 minutes went by. I wanted to go and find them. Sarah grabbed me by my arm and gave me a look that said, "Please don't go." I didn't want to leave her by herself, and I also didn't want her in there with that thing I saw. I didn't mention what I saw for obvious reasons. Instead, I opted to call the cops to search the house. When they got there, I told them what happened. They didn't seem like they believed me. The officer that I was talking to noticed how scared Sarah was, though. So he and his partner went into the house to look for Robert and John. They came back, telling us the house was empty. There was no one inside. Maybe it was the shock and disbelief on our faces, but the officer asked if we were drinking or taking drugs. We weren't, but when we told that to the officer, he had a look of concern. He told us he would drive us home. I told him Robert's address so he could grab my truck and head on back. 2 days later, there was still no word from John or Robert. I got a text Monday morning from Robert about the math homework he forgot to do. I thought it was a prank because of what happened. I asked him only things Robert would know. I was doing a sort of gotcha moment. But he got them all right. I asked if he remembered what happened this weekend, and he said he had no idea what I was talking about. I asked about John, and I swear he told me then that he hadn't seen John in years. I was getting confused. I'd been noticing that kids at this school were saying the same thing about John. What happened to him? What took him? Why were people acting so weird? I began talking about it to Sarah, and she remembers it like there's no tomorrow. So what really happened to Robert and John? What is in my house? From Sleepless Nights. 2 years ago, my 21-year-old husband, Kay, my brother, who's 26, D, and I, a 21-year-old woman, moved into a rental home. For the first month of living there, nothing really happened, until I came home from work one day. At the time, I worked until 7 p.m., so Kay and D would be home long before me. So one day after work, I walked into the house. Kay and D were sitting in the living room. They told me something crazy just happened. D continued to tell me that they had heard heavy footsteps walking above them. Something to note about this house is the floors are very thin. You can easily hear everything going on upstairs. D explains they heard these footsteps walking for a couple of minutes. And once it went silent, Kay went to check out the upstairs. He didn't find anything. No source for the sound. They would go on to hear footsteps another time while I was working late. Unfortunately, moving forward, I would be the one to experience most of the activity. My bedroom door has one of those sliding locks. How it works is you have to lift the metal bar up, slide it across the latch between two metal prongs, and that way it can't be opened. I woke up in the middle of the night one night to a loud noise. I quickly recognized the sound. The latching, sliding lock wiggling as if trying to be unlocked and someone trying to open the door. My heart raced. I tried to shake Kay awake, but he was a heavy sleeper, so I had to call out his name. At that moment, the lock stopped moving, and everything went quiet. I froze, heart still pounding. I stared at the door for a while, just shocked. The next day, when I told Kay about this, he tried to soothe me because I was almost in tears telling him about it. I think he was scared too. About a month later, I woke up to the same sound, the lock shaking again. Without hesitation, I shook Kay awake. This time, he woke up right away, asking what was going on. But once again, the noise stopped. I told him what happened. He hesitated at first, but then got up and opened the door, looking around. There was no one there. Nothing else had been disturbed. Before he suggests that maybe D was playing a joke on us, well, we could both clearly hear him snoring in his room. Not to mention, his door makes a loud creak when he opens it. We did not hear his door open nor close. I did not sleep well that night. Time moved on. Nothing eventful really happened. Aside from out of the corner of my eye, I would sometimes see a dark figure in the shadows. I was constantly seeing a dark figure, or potentially figures, peeking around doorways, mainly the laundry room and upper bathroom doorways. It started to really freak me out, so I made up an excuse, with K and D, so everyone started to shut the doors. It didn't stop completely, but it made things a bit better. Small things like uneasy feelings, and feeling like I'm being watched, happened too. Especially in the bathroom upstairs. Right next to the bathroom is the spare bedroom that we use for storage. Well, that room gives off the creepiest vibes. Nothing has ever happened in there, but you walk in, and it feels bad. I don't really know how to describe it, other than a strange energy. This went on for months, leading up to a very terrifying night. Kay and I were in our room. D was working an overnight job at this point, so he wasn't home. Kay and I were watching YouTube, as we did most nights. We paused our current video, discussing it so the entire house was quiet besides us talking. Out of nowhere, there was this gigantic crash downstairs. It wasn't just a noise either. The entire house literally shook. It was so loud, and feeling the house moving, we were convinced someone had somehow broken in downstairs. We grabbed weapons. There was a quieter bang then, and I was frozen, terrified. Kay wanted to go check the noise, but genuinely thinking someone broke in, I refused to let him go, and I was too scared to go along with him. He peeked out our door, trying to get a better listen to the downstairs area. All was silent, but I still feared for our lives. I told Kay to shut and lock the door that leads to the staircase. He quickly did that, then bolted our door back up. After we argued back and forth for a while, because I wanted to call the police, but Kay didn't want to unless we knew it was an absolute emergency, we intermittently paused to listen to noises, peeking out the window and seeing nothing. Eventually, we both finally agreed to go take a look. We cleared the upstairs, room by room, checking closets and even this really strange door we have next to the bathroom. We don't know what it is, but it also has a sliding bolt lock on it. Upon opening it up, it's just like this green slanted wall. No real purpose for it. This is important later. We tried to go down the stairs as slow and quietly as possible, but our stairs are loud, and every step creaks when stepped on. Once on the main floor, we cleared each room slowly again, until we found no one. We even checked the front and back porches, but both doors were still locked up tight. We searched to see if something had fallen, maybe, but found nothing out of place. Still, to this day, we cannot conclude what the noise was, or how it would have shaken the entire house like that. We still live here to this day. Things still do happen, but less often. I've recently felt like I was being followed. I had someone or something sigh right into my ear while I was getting ready to take a shower. The most recent event happened a week ago. I was bored and home alone. Fully aware of how bad that idea was, I completely ignored my own gut feeling and downloaded one of those free ghost hunting apps. Well, it worked like a spirit box, just without static. I started up a session with some simple introductory questions. Is anyone here? Do you want to talk? But nothing happened. I nearly deleted the app, but decided against it. I wanted to try one last time. What's your name? Then it replied, Evan. I sat shocked for a moment, trying to convince myself that it was just a coincidence. I continued to ask questions with vague responses. Then I got another name, Ellie. I asked where they were, and it wasn't until I was retelling this story to my husband that this occurred to me. The device said, Top. I thought at the time they meant my shirt. I asked them what they meant, but the silence was deafening. I asked, Where are you? And a moment later it read, Above you. Top had meant they were on top of me, This is the one and only time I got a phrase of words. Before that, it had been only single words, and since I tried another session with only one-word responses, I just told them goodbye and stopped. Do you remember the strange locked door that led to a green wall I mentioned earlier? The bolted lock keeps lifting up, and none of us are doing it. We tell each other when it happens, we fix it, and it just ends up happening again. That's where we leave this story. If anything else happens, I'll let you know.